This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Are college students rejecting free speech? Well, the Brookings Institution has come out with a study that says they are. Actually, one in five advocate some sort of physical violence, physical force, against someone who might say something hurtful or offensive. Well, we're going to talk about that later in the program. But first, we're going to talk about some national security issues. We've got this Islamification of the USA, particularly the refugee and the immigrant population. We're going to talk about that and go back to the Iran deal. Big news this week with President Trump at the UN giving signals that he's about to pull out of this deal. And then, of course, an executive order today on North Korea. This isn't Tony Perkins. It's Jerry Johnson, president of NRB, National Religious Broadcasters, sitting in for Tony. You're listening to Washington Watch. And I don't know who better to help us watch what's happening in Washington, particularly when it comes to national security, than Frank Gaffney. He's founder, president, and CEO of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, welcome to the program. Frank, are you there? Well, we had Frank on the line. We'll get Frank on the line. So, folks, what we're going to talk about is a story in the news. It came from the Tennessee Star. And this paper is reporting that there is a American Muslim Advisory Council board member who says the Constitution is a document of white supremacy. So here's the tweet. Her name is Drost Kokoye. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I'm doing my best. And here's the tweet. Constitution Day to celebrate a document that writes white supremacy into law. Now, this is a refugee. This is an immigrant. And she says, you know, this is what I think of Constitution Day. Well, with us to talk about it again is Frank Gaffney. I think he's on the line now. He's founder and president and CEO of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, what do you think about this tweet and this trend?
Well, first of all, let me apologize for having the mute button on, Jerry. It's great to talk with you. Thank you for bearing with me. It's not, of course, unrelated to the topic that you'll be discussing later in the show. In fact, I would argue
this
is the whole point of the campaign that is now being mounted against free speech in America, whether it's on college campuses, whether it's by, in this instance, a clearly rabidly anti-American refugee who is in our country, immigrant, I'm not sure whether she's a refugee, but immigrant to this country, who couldn't make more clear her determination to transform it, to dispense with that Constitution. And the trouble is, Jerry, that she's not alone. She has friends in the community of which she's a part, evidently. I gather the Sharia supremacist Muslim community, Sharia being, of course, this totalitarian political, military, legal doctrine that that the authorities of Islam say is the true faith, and that those who adhere to it are obliged to engage in jihad of one kind or another to impose on the rest of us. But in addition to the jihadis and the Sharia supremacists, you also have those on the radical left. And people say, well, I mean, they could possibly collaborate. After all, the Sharia supremacists want to kill homosexuals. They want to oppress women. They want to enslave blacks. They want to
counterintuitive, but they have a common enemy.
Those are things that the guys on the left are supposedly not about. But
right.
Yes, they have a common enemy in us, in our country, in our Constitution, and they want to take us down, and they're working hard at it. And the leading edge of that effort, as you know, and you've done such important work at the National Religious Broadcasters on this issue because it's obviously so central to your mission,
right.
They want to silence us. So that's the first step. once they get that done, then it's just a question of sort of mopping us up to, I don't know, get us into re-education camps or whatever. But it comes down to putting out of business their political opponents. And I find myself to be one of them, as I know are you.
Well, I'm looking at this article. It's very interesting that this woman rejected her status, particularly her identity as an American citizen. So, you know, that just sort of reinforces the tweet. And I'm actually looking at these polling results some time ago, well, from 2015. This, to me, is concerning because it shows that this woman is not an outlier, where a majority, 51% of Muslims say, we believe we should have a choice of being governed by Sharia law, that is Islamic law, or the U.S. Constitution. So, you know, at least over half of them saying in America they'd like this choice. Put another way, only 39% said that Muslims should be subject to American courts. That means, you know, essentially 4 out of 10 don't think they should be subject to the U.S. Constitution. And you've talked about something called the red-green axis, which you described a moment ago, but I think that's telling. That is, red, you know, you've got liberalism and communism and socialism, and green, you've got this Islamification notion. You know, what can Americans do to counter this?
Well, if I could just go back for a moment, that poll that you read some of the critical findings of was actually one that was conducted for us by a
yes.
gal that your listeners have heard of course, Kellyanne Conway. She was at the time in the polling business. And Kellyanne did this really important analysis. And I think, you know, you can't necessarily extrapolate from it to say that that's true of the larger Muslim population. But it is striking that of those that were responding to the poll, at least, a very substantial proportion, in fact, as you say, slightly over a majority, felt that they should be able to be governed not by the U.S. Constitution and all of the laws pursuant to it, the supreme law of the land, let us recall, but rather they should have the choice of being ruled by Sharia, this Islamic totalitarian system. So that brings us to the question you've asked, which is, so what do we do about this? I think the first thing we have to do about it is we have to understand what it is these people have in mind, whether it's the Islamists or whether it's their enablers on the left. And that is that no matter how much they dress this up and they want to call us, you know, haters and bigots and racists and Islamophobes and white supremacists and all the rest of the things, that is simply an obscurant designed to try to silence us while they advance, sometimes stealthily, sometimes very overtly through violence, as in Charlottesville, by the way. This effort to gain the whip hand, to be able to dictate who will be able to speak, who will be able to be heard in the public square, especially on the internet these days. And it's a fundamental anti-constitutional threat to our freedoms. It has to be understood as such. And then the second thing I think that we need to do as a people is to stand up to exercise our freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a muscle. It'll atrophy even if they don't try to take it away from you. If you just self-censor, Jerry, and you've warned about this very
use it or lose it.
On your broadcasters, you will lose it if you don't use it. Exactly right.
Yep. Well, we've seen the Islamification of meals and prisons, books and schools, chapels, and finance in America. I mean, so what's your website again, Frank? Because, you know, you've really done a lot of research here. What could people look at? Give your website, if you would.
Well, it's securefreedom.org, securefreedom.org.
So this is the place.
Yeah. The thing that I would really commend to everybody, Jerry, because I think it's just the foundational text on this subject, is a very thin, very accessible book. And we didn't write it. We published it, but it was written by one of the top operatives of the Muslim Brotherhood in America back in 1991. You and I have talked about it many times. But this is the secret plan for how the Muslim Brotherhood seeks to dominate the Muslim community in this country, because not all of them want to live under Sharia. Not all of them want to participate in imposing it on the rest of us. In fact, I think in America, most Muslims don't. But to the extent that the Muslim Brotherhood can, through a stealthy kind of jihad they call civilization jihad, they are working to dominate their own community and to turn it into an instrument to help take down this country, which is their ultimate purpose. They make it absolutely clear. In fact, the mission statement, according to this top Muslim Brotherhood operative, and by the way, this book was not meant for our consumption. This was meant as a report back to his mothership in Egypt. It says the mission of the Muslim Brotherhood in North America is to destroy Western civilization from within by their hands, meaning ours, and the hands of the believers, so that Allah's religion is made victorious over all other religions, unquote. That's what we're up against. People need to know that. They can find a free copy downloadable at securefreedom.org. It's called the Explanatory Memorandum.
Well, we got a couple of minutes, Frank. I want to shift gears real quick. You know, just tell us what you think about these this sound we're getting from the White House, essentially, that the president is probably about to pull out of this deal with Iran. The leader of France has said nuclear deal no longer enough to safeguard against growing power of Tehran in the Middle East. What do you make of the developments this week about Iran?
Well, not only is the deal not enough to protect against it, it is contributing to the problem from Iran.
Yeah.
I call it the Obama bomb deal, because what President Obama did was not only enshrine all of the elements for Iran's nuclear weapons program, essentially allowed them all to continue to operate, albeit perhaps at a slightly less active level, but we can't even monitor whether that's true or not. And most of it's going on in secret facilities we're not allowed to see at all. But beyond that, he transferred on the order of $150 billion.
Yes.
To this regime. And suddenly that, you know, it's like, you know, throwing gasoline on the proverbial fire. It's becoming much more dangerous, not just with respect to its nuclear activities, but its terroristic activities, its efforts to subvert even friends of ours in the region, notably, most especially Israel, but also Egypt and Saudi Arabia and others. And it is also working, I believe, inexorably to increase the threat to this country as well. They call us the Great Satan. They've called since 1979 for our destruction. I mean, what are we thinking, enabling this and legitimating it?
Folks, that's Frank Gaffney. Franks, thanks so much. Securefreedom.org. We'll talk to you later, Frank.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, folks. I'm opening up the line now. What do you think about the Islamification of these refugees, of these immigrants? This desire, at least half of them in this poll, to live under Sharia law instead of the U.S. Constitution? What do you think about the Islamification of meals in prisons, books in schools, chapels, chaplains, or finance, Sharia finance? Have you heard of that? The number is 866-372-7234. We want to hear from you, 866-372-7234. Are you concerned about this Islamification? Or actually, Iran getting a nuclear weapon? What do you think of the president's new position and policy? This is Jerry Johnson sitting in for Tony Perkins. Give us a call.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. But progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more. In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
All right, folks, are you concerned about the Islamification of USA refugees and immigrants coming from the Muslim community? We just heard a report from Tennessee. It's, you know, something that ought to concern you. A spokesman for this community saying essentially that the Constitution writes white supremacy into law. She was against Constitution Day. She rejected her status and identity as an American citizen. And we just we looked at some polling that shows that at least in one poll conducted by Kellyanne Conway's company in 2015, over half of this community want a choice whether they live under the Constitution or Sharia law. So we're taking your calls now. The number is 866-372-7234. Reminding you later we're going to talk about the fact that college students are rejecting free speech. And that's coming up. But right now, let's go to the callers. We've got George from Missouri on the line. George, are you concerned about this issue of Islam?
I think the president's right in that the people that these people that are coming in, Islamists, I mean, they're living in our country, adhere to the United States Constitution. If you don't want to do that, go back to your own country and see how they like it. Why can't we build any Christian churches in your country? Because they'd cut our heads off. And what you know, you want to live in our country? If you commit a crime, they ought to send you back, put you in prison, or either send you back to your own country. Let's see you do that over in your own country. You know what they'd do to you? They don't send them all home.
Yeah, there. I think what George is bringing up, folks, is there's a real double standard. You know, you're seeing an outcropping of Islamic centers. Some people would call them mosques, but I think it's very interesting that most of them are called Islamic centers. But do you see this in Saudi Arabia? No, actually, when our soldiers are stationed there, they've got to hide the cross on their uniform. They've got to worship in secret and be private. Of course, here, you know, because we have freedom of religion, we're allowing these Islamic centers to go up everywhere. But the problem is that Islam is a total system. It's not just a spiritual religion, the way we normally think of that, just heaven and hell, God and prayer, things like that, loving your neighbor. that actually there's a whole political and legal system that comes as a package with Islam. Historically, that has been the case. In fact, that is the case. And Sharia law is part of that package. And that's why half of these folks say in this poll they want the choice whether they can divorce under Sharia law instead of American law. And that's a very particular kind of divorce law. It allows a man to essentially just say three times, I divorce you, to his wife. She has no legal standing, essentially, to testify in that Sharia court. And so, I mean, that's un-American. It's unconstitutional. Well, we've got William on the line from Springfield. William, what do you think about this trend of Islamification?
It's a very dangerous. Have you ever heard of George Washington's prophecy? The one of last third prophecy was about the Muslim nation attacking the United States, and they came over and destroyed many cities and towns. But the United States, the people prevail. But when they put a knife to your throat, they're going to use it.
Well, I hadn't heard of that prophecy. Obviously, people have been using knives and guns and cars. And, of course, we want to be very careful. Not all Muslims are doing that. Not most Muslims are being that. So don't anyone misrepresent what we're saying on this program. Anyway, that's never been the position of Washington Watch or my position. But here's what I will say. Historically, Islam has used violence for conquest. And we are seeing right now in Europe and in the United States people who are motivated by jihad to use guns and knives and cars and bombs to terrorize. And it really is a problem. We've got Billy on the line from Oklahoma. Billy, what do you think about this?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I think that it's a cult. I mean, the women are all wrapped up. It's 105 degrees out. This country loves beer. Come here and enjoy all the benefits of it, but they want to live like they want in their country. And that's, you know, that's not America. This is America. They enjoy all the freedoms, but yet they don't want to you know, they want to live in their little world. I'll take it off of that.
All right. Well, Billy, I want to pick up on one point you made there, which is about covering up. Now, look, we're for freedom of expression in lots of ways. And, of course, the way people want to dress in one sense is part of the freedom package. But this matter of covering up your face, I don't think it has to be about the hijab, but that's what they call it when they totally cover up the face. But, you know, if you cover up your face and go into a bank, if you cover up your face and go into the airport, if you cover up your face and go into any federal building, I mean, you're going to be stopped. You're going to be sent outside, if not arrested on site. And there's a real double standard here about, you know, security and identification and your driver's license and your passport. We are again, this is sort of the Islamification of the security apparatus. We've talked about the Sharia meals and the books and the chapels and the chaplains and the finance. But here you've got with security a lowering of the standard, the American standard, to make an accommodation for something. And I don't feel good about it. We've got Sid on the line from Texas. Sid, we're about out of time. 30 seconds. What do you think?
I think you were right about the facts behind Islam. It's an entire ideology. We're not just battling just one rule of law. It's an entire governmental system and how it's implemented and everything. And I do agree with what you were saying earlier. Not all Muslims represent the Islam we know that is oppressive, just like not all Christians represent Christ. There are tons of Muslims out there that don't stand for their messenger.
All right, Sid. That's a good word. We got to phase out now because we're about to have a break. But let me just tell you, coming up, we're going to be talking about another trend. We've talked about Sharia. One of the things that you get under Sharia is no criticism of the Quran and no criticism of Muhammad. Well, what we're seeing on college and university campuses is students no longer believing in free speech. They actually might go along with the Sharia version of free speech, which is not to believe in it. No criticism of your religion, no criticism of your book, of your lifestyle. So let's talk about it. Free speech on campus, it's going away. Jerry Johnson filling in for Tony Perkins.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Okay, folks, the Washington Post is not a conservative newspaper, and so I don't think you should suspect that they're trying to whip something up. They're actually exposing a trend, and that is the movement away from free speech, from First Amendment freedoms on college and university campuses. This is not Tony Perkins. I'm Jerry Johnson, sitting in for Tony. You are listening to Washington Watch. But I'm from National Religious Broadcasters, NRB, and we are committed at NRB to defending free speech. You know, the first three freedoms in the First Amendment are freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press. And I'm saying to folks, you know, what we want NRB to be, we want NRB to be for the First Amendment what the NRA is for the Second Amendment. We are absolutely committed to defending the First Amendment, speech, religion, and press. But actually, there's a movement away from that on college and university campuses. And in this article in the Washington Post, this polling shows that 1 out of 5 college students, 20%, think that force, physical force, is justified if someone says something that upsets you or offends you. And, of course, we've heard of these safe spaces and safe zones on college and university campuses, the canceling of speakers, the harassing of speakers. Well, let's talk about it with an expert. We've got Casey Maddox on the line. Casey is director of the Center for Academic Freedom with Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, which is, by the way, a member of NRB. Casey, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Casey, when you read this story in the Washington Post, does that fit what you're seeing out there?
Well, it unfortunately does. It's both dispiriting and entirely predictable. This is the environment that we've created on our university campuses when universities are restricting what students can say, when and where they can say it, who they can associate with. It's predictable that you would end up producing generations of students who think that the First Amendment is something that the government grants. And your first freedoms are really given to you by government, and that's what we see here. Students fundamentally don't understand the First Amendment, and that's going to impact our future.
So they haven't been taught it, I guess, by their parents or at junior high or high school on their way to colleges, perhaps the colleges. I mean, what's happened, though, because you remember the free speech movement? I think that was centered in Berkeley, and we've just seen that it seems to me like Berkeley doesn't even get that anymore.
No, you know, that's exactly right. I mean, it is. The free speech movement started at Berkeley, and yet here we have, you know, on campus at UC Berkeley, a real complete lack of respect for the First Amendment. But, you know, the really troubling thing, or the very interesting thing maybe that came out of this poll, is that there is not really even a breakdown, a difference based on political affiliation. It's both conservatives and liberals who are just not getting the First Amendment and seem to think that restricting hate speech or is permissible, or even violence against speakers that they deem hateful is permissible. There's not a real breakdown, a clear line between conservative and liberal. Everyone seems to not understand the First Amendment these days on campus. And so, you know, it's a problem I think we all have to solve together, rather than it being something where the finger can be pointed just at one side.
Hmm. Well, one thing I've noticed among millennials, college students, is the current generation, is this idea that, we've got erotic rights or sexual rights. Of course, the Constitution doesn't really cover that. Supreme Court years ago tried to, fit that into privacy or something like that. But this seems to be an absolute, that you can do whatever you want to with your body today. That's not in the Constitution. But freedom of religion, freedom of same-sex relationships or the transsexual movement, that's verboten. And actually, you'll be shouted out or run out or forbidden even on a campus. Do you follow what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I think it does directly impact culture. I mean, it would be one thing if what's happening on these campuses is just limited to those campuses, right? If it was just a problem of students not being able to speak freely. But it's not. I mean, these students are tomorrow's judges and our legislators and our human rights commissioners and our voters. And, it's predictable, frankly, that when you spend 4 years at a public university learning that the response to someone's speech that I don't like, or even their beliefs that I don't like, is to contact the human rights or the bias response team at the school.
Yeah.
What's predictable then is these people then leave the university and think, hey, if someone believes or says something I don't like, then my response is to call the Human Rights Commission in my state and have them shut down. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, that's the rest of ADF litigates these cases all the time, is taking them to the Supreme Court, because free speech is under assault in our culture.
Well, thank you, Casey. Thank you for your work at ADF. ADF and NRB will continue to defend freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, because everyone knows that's not happening at the college and university level today. Thanks so much, Casey. Okay, folks, when we come back, you may not know, but Sam Sorbo and Kevin Sorbo have a new movie that's coming out in a month, Let There Be Light. Conservative Fox News host Sean Hannity is part of this project. When we come back, one of the stars from that film, Sam Sorbo, will be on the line to talk about it. It's exciting. It's coming out next month. This is Jerry Johnson filling in for Tony Perkins. I'll be right back.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discussed the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Well, do you like to go to the movies? Well, I do. In fact, I like to go so much that I sort of made a study of film. And when I taught at college and seminary, I had a course called Cinematic Theology. I had another course called Theology of Movies and Visual Media. And I taught the course because, I'd studied it and actually thought I had something to say about the topic, but I like to watch the films. That's another reason I taught the course. It was just fun to watch the films and to watch them in class. But why would we do that? And that's because I think one of the most formative points of culture today is what happens in the movie theater. It's hard to overestimate that. And I'm so pleased when there's so much darkness in the film industry to see some light. And I'm really excited when I see Christians and conservatives coming up with film projects that emphasize the good, the true, and the beautiful. And we're going to talk about one of those movies right now coming out. Let There Be Light is the name of this movie. And so just the title of it sounds that way, but it's got some darkness. I mean, what could be darker and more scary than Hercules playing an atheist? Okay, I'm talking about Kevin Sorbo as an atheist. Well, that would be pretty tough. But we're going to talk right now to one of the stars of the film, and that is Kevin's wife, Sam Sorbo. Sam, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I didn't realize you were quite the filmophile that you say you are. That's amazing.
But well, it's a secret that I'm revealing.
Right?
But say that again.
I said Jesus taught in parables. There's a reason
that
he used storytelling
exactly.
to get his message across. And I think perhaps the church has sort of has maybe forgotten or got distracted from
Sam.
This idea of storytelling being really the most powerful way of getting a message through. And as we see now, there are a lot of messages that are coming out of Hollywood, and not all of them are pro-freedom, pro-our way of life, right?
Sam, you know, I want to stop right there before we even talk about the movie, because I'm really glad, you know, you brought this up. When I was teaching in college and seminary, I mean, my PhD is in ethics, and I've got a minor in philosophy. And I love the doctrine and the theology, point one, point two, point three. And I suppose, Sam, if I had written the Bible, that's the way I would have written it. But that isn't the way God wrote it, and that isn't the way Jesus taught. That is, you are exactly right. most of the Bible is stories, and most of what Jesus did was tell stories. And that's why I think film is so powerful. Film is able to touch people where they live, talks about their marriage, talks about alcohol, talking about atheism. I mean, the themes of the film that you're in, that you're starring in, these are the themes of human life. And so you're not just hearing about it, but you're sort of seeing it. And I think that is what's powerful about film. And I think people, you know, one of the things I taught in the course was, you know, every film is about something. It's about, you know, where did we come from, or what's wrong with this world, or how to get it right, or where are we heading? Every film, no matter what it seems to be about in the trailer, is actually about some of those ideas. And it's so exciting when Christians and conservatives say, you know, let's make a film, you know, that's uplifting, that's about the good, the true, and the beautiful. Well, Sam, tell us, you know, about this film. Where did you get the idea? What was the motivation? Just tease it a little bit for us.
So I was struck one day. I'd been working on a faith-based television show, and that was going well, but then it sort of got derailed. And I was thinking one day, I wonder what it would look like if the world's greatest atheist had sort of a come-to-Jesus moment, something happened to him that challenged his worldview. Because as we know, you know, to be an atheist takes a great deal of faith,
yes,
faith that there isn't anything, which really is it's really counter evidence, right?
Yes, and so, it is. You're suppressing evidence.
Right? And so I called a friend of mine who's a well-known Hollywood screenwriter and asked him if he would consider writing the screenplay with me. And, of course, he said no, because he's a well-known Hollywood screenwriter.
Wow. Wow.
But I took him to lunch, and I told him the idea, and he jumped on board immediately because he was very attracted to the idea of writing about real life and what it looks like. And, you know, he writes big movies where Arnold Schwarzenegger is, you know, get out of the helicopter. Like that pays the bills and it's fun, but the real stuff that you can really chew on, the real things of life, don't come by that often. And so we worked on it together. And honestly, within 2 weeks of our agreeing to work on the movie together, Sean Hannity called my husband and said, "I want to do a faith-based movie with you. Do you have anything?"
Wow.
And so we flew to New York and talked to Sean for half an hour, and he was in. Because he too understands the power of storytelling, and this tells the story of a man in crisis. He's got obviously a horrible relationship with his father in heaven. He is a horrible father on earth. He has two sons, and he's struggling with that relationship. He's struggling to be the provider for a family that he abandoned, and it tells really a very current male story. That's happening, you know, today all over the place. And I think that's why men really like the movie even more than women. Women love the movie, but men feel somehow represented. You know, there's a line that Kevin says in the movie where he kind of spits it out at me because I'm challenging what he's doing with his life as a confirmed atheist. And he says, well, it pays the bills. Because our culture has kind of relegated men out of
to that alone,
and into
yep.
just this bill-paying role. Like, you write the check. You shut up, sit down, write the checks. You stupid man, you. And in fact, that's been promoted on television and sitcoms. It's always this dad's the stupid one, Homer Simpson, you know. And I don't mean to single out Homer. It's you know, throughout our right. media culture. So this film kind of turns that on its side a little bit and says, well, this guy still has value. And I think that really resonates with men because the film tells them that on a visceral level they still matter, they still have value.
Folks, this is Washington Watch. I'm Jerry Johnson, and you're listening to Sam Sorbo. She's talking about this new film. It's coming out in about a month, and so you're going to hear more about this. This film's going to be screened at the Value Voter Summit.
That's right.
It's due to open October 27. Is that right, Sam?
October 27th. And we actually have a contest going. If you visit LetThereBeLightMovie.com /contest.
Right.
You can enter a Let There Be Light story, like an uplifting story. I think it has to be less than 150 words, and win tickets to the showing at Value Voters Summit. And Value Voters has been really gracious. They're offering hotel. They pitched in. And
oh,
then,
great. Yeah.
Even,
I'll just give that website again. It's LetThereBeLight.com.
LetThereBeLightMovie.com.
LetThereBeLightMovie.com /contest.
Contest.
All right. So that's huge. So I don't want you to give away the film any more than you want to, but I think you've already alluded to this. So Kevin Sorbo, Mr. Hercules, is playing the atheist. He's the bad dad and the bad husband, and he's struggling with lots of things in his life. And you, Sam, your role is the wife. You said you're speaking to him in this film, so you kind of gave that away already, I guess. I'm not giving that away. And Sean Hannity is the executive producer, but he's also in the film, isn't he?
He does. He plays a small role. He actually plays himself, and he does a very convincing job. He's so much Sean Hannity, there's no doubt.
So, I mean, there are other issues. You know, we were just talking about the university here a few moments ago and how there's a movement away from free speech and there's intimidation at the university and the college situation right now is sort of against free speech and secular and hostile to faith. I mean, that's kind of a subplot here, struggling with alcohol. I mean, this film really, it's not just about atheism. It's not just about the family. It's not just about alcohol. It's about, there are a lot of touch points here to life. Would you agree with that?
It really touches on a lot of different things. It's really just about, I mean, from the Christian perspective, it's about how to get right with understanding that there is forgiveness and there's grace. And that's a very visceral thing. When people understand that as much as they try and fail, that there's always forgiveness and there's always grace. And I think that's sort of the overarching message of the movie. And then there's a subtle message in the movie that the world is really being overrun with darkness right now. There's such animosity, even here in the United States, but also just around the world. I mean, the ISIS flags are black. I mean, there's a darkness that seems to be descending.
Yes.
And as you and I both know, and probably most of your listeners know, there's really only one way to dispel the darkness, and that's with the light. And we know what the light is.
And that's
is.
The title of the film, Let There Be Light. So that
Let
makes
there be
sense.
Light. And so there are a lot of people out there who don't know where to find the light.
Well, we do, and we hope people will go see this film. Again, the website is LetThereBeLightMovie.com/contest if they want to enter this contest. And again, this contest will get you access to this film. It's going to be previewed at the Value Voter Summit, but it's also opening October 27. And so if you're a church worker, a pastor, youth group leader, Bible study leader, you might want to just put that on your calendar, October 27, because we need to get out and see good films, faith films, Christian films, conservative films. I think it's very important for us to know. And we'll be covering this more, Sam, you know, on the NRB website, also at the Value Voter Summit here on Washington Watch. We'll kind of remind people as the date gets closer, but we're about a month out. And is there anything else you want us to know about this film?
Well, the submission deadline is Saturday, October the 1st. So get in your story. It's supposed to be like a story about a good deed or a thoughtful act. We're just trying to share the light and goodness and kindness kind of thing. And so there'll be winners will be announced on Tuesday, October 3rd. And you'll see it on Hannity.com because, of course, this is his movie as much as it's ours. And he's been just an amazing executive producer. I couldn't have asked for any better. We certainly couldn't have. I think if you go to the website, LetThereBeLightMovie.com, and look at the testimonials and look at the trailer and stuff, I think you'll be convinced. This is the movie that you want to see. And ladies out there, for the man in your life, if you want to invite your husband, your brother, your son,
good.
This is the movie to take them to, for which they will thank you. because this is the movie that somehow, and it's not like an on-purpose thing, but it really holds up men and tells them that they have value.
Sam Sorbo, starring in Let There Be Light. Sam, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, folks. Wow. Atheism, Islam. We've been talking about those two issues today. And it reminds us of what we said yesterday about going from the news to the good news. I mean, atheism is in the news. And I think that's part of the pushback on the college and the university campus. There is a secular spirit, an atheistic spirit, an agnostic spirit on the college and university campus. And as Sam said a moment ago, there is some suppression, actually, of reason to be an atheist. You must suppress. In fact, the Bible teaches that in Romans 1 and 2. Because there are reasons of the head not to be an atheist, and there are reasons of the heart not to be an atheist. I mean, Romans 1 clearly says, by the things that are made, we know about things that weren't made. By the things that are seen, we know about the unseen. And that is, there is evidence for a creator. There is an evidence for a God. There is evidence for a Lord. And everyone instinctively is able to see that. It's suppressed because we're all sinners and we don't really want to be accountable. But historically, we've all tried to shut that out and suppress it. But the atheist, builds on that and builds a case against that. And then in Romans 2, we're told that there's the conscience accusing or excusing us. And that is, there is always, for everyone, this matter of the conscience and the idea of right and wrong. And to be an atheist, you've got to push that down. You've got to say, oh, that's just a cultural taboo. No, it's conscience. You are made in God's image. Perhaps the Holy Spirit is speaking to you as well, and you know it's not right, but you've got to push that down to be an atheist or an agnostic. And so this film is really going to intersect with all of that. And, of course, we were talking about Islam earlier. And one of the things I often say to people, do you want the Jesus way or do you want the Muhammad way? When you talk about Sharia law and you talk about the rights of women, when you talk about free speech and freedom of religion and freedom of the press, do we want the world of Christianity, the Judeo-Christian world, the Western world? I mean, Jesus said, I've come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. I mean, the Christian life is a life of freedom. It's a life of liberty. It's a life of joy. That Islamist world is a very dark world, and a depressed world, and a violent world. And Jesus said, I've come that you might have life. That's what I want. I want Jesus. I want life. This is Washington Watch. Thank you for joining us.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.